Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp. I'm joined today with my guest, Derek Polk, former professional basketball player, played for the Harlem Globetrotters, father, and business owner. How are you doing today, Derek?
I'm doing well and blessed. How about yourself?
Well and blessed indeed. Well and blessed indeed. I'm excited to talk about this one because we had talked ultimately before we started recording, and you've had quite the life. A lot of whiplash, I feel like, in some cases even, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. I've lived a very interesting and life that, you know, I always thought about it would, how it would be, but to live it, you know, to live some of your dreams of being able to play professional basketball. First of all, before basketball, go to college and go to Ohio State, one of the top schools in the country, and play basketball there, and also get my degree, the first person in my family to get the degree. That was an accomplishment for me because growing up in the projects of Cleveland with single mom, just raised myself and my sister. No one expected me to do all these things. But I also had something inside of me, and I persevered to make it work, and I had to sacrifice a lot of things in order to get there. But the rewards when you sacrifice stuff is very rewarding. It really is, and I've been blessed.
That's fantastic. So before, you've given me a lot to dig into, and I love it, but before we go too far into it, can you kind of tell folks what you're working on currently? Where is Derek Polk right now? What kind of business are you working on, or are you playing for anybody currently?
Okay. Right now, I am, first of all, I am assistant coach at Bryan and Stratton College, and that's part of my, one of my dreams is to be a college coach. But to be doing in this area in Ohio and then travel is blessed because it gives me a chance to still spend time with my family. And I just became a grandfather, and so I get a chance to see my grandson. I also started Derek Polk Sports, which is camps, clinics, speaking engagements, and also AAU. And one of the things about my program is I've always coached for other people, and I decided to coach for myself. And what gave me that opportunity was when I coached for everybody else, they were always talking about the bottom line. And what about the kids that can't play, can't afford to play, and their home circumstances dictate that they can't play. But I try to raise money so then those kids who can't play, they can still play. And that, I've learned that when you have something like, let's say, basketball, football, or whatever, it gives you a sense of purpose, a sense of being a part of something. And it helps you to deal with some of the things that's going on in your life. And one of the other things about our program is that we just don't throw the basketball out. We teach them how to play basketball the right way. But we also teach them about life, and we try to teach young men and young women to be responsible and to be prepared for going out into the real world. And I think that's one of the most important things that a program can do.
I think that's huge. I would agree. That's fantastic. So you mentioned you'd grown up in the projects. Can you tell me about, and your story I feel like is kind of unique from the people I've interviewed in that, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the original dream, that first real dream, has almost carried you into adulthood. Like a lot of people shift dreams, it seems like, between high school, college, and onward. But it sounds like your first dream has been the dream to carry you through. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember, and I'm share my age, I remember watching on TV and watching Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson and Dr. J and shooting hook shots and going, taking off and dunking. And that inspired me. And I said to myself, I wanted to be a professional basketball player. I don't know how I'm going to do it when I was younger, but I'm going to make it happen. And, my mom, she said, well, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. I'm always be here to support you. And I think that was my biggest fan was to have my mom support me, my mom and my sister. My sister was young at that time and teach her about basketball as well. But, you know, my mom was my inspiration because my dad wasn't around. You know, they were divorced when I was real young, when I was a little kid. So my dad was never really in my life. And, you know, that made me persevere and be stronger even more because I only had to be the man of the family, but I also had to take care and look out for my sister as well. So I had a lot on my plate, a lot on my shoulders, but I was ready for it.
So you're kind of used to juggling a lot then, really, because even at a young age, I mean, we're talking about a world where you're babysitter, right? But also, a full-time student, but also you've got this dream and you're ready to make it happen. You don't know how, but you know you're going to make it happen.
A coach took some time with me to help me to teach me about the game of basketball, which enhanced it even more. And, you know, it was hard for my mom to just let me go and learn because, you know, to me, I was her baby. And, you know, it's hard to do that, but she says, you know what? I have to let you go to follow your dreams because I see, number one, you're a good kid. Number two, you're taking care of your grades. And number three, you found something that you really love and want to put time into it. And she said, right ahead and do it.
Now, tell me about though, because you had talked about scenarios where not necessarily everybody did encourage you. You had some teachers that thought differently, because you're describing a coach that's really pouring into you, and then your mother's really pouring into you, and your younger sister's looking up to you. It sounds like that was a lot of the foundation.
Correct. Correct. I had a lot of people that didn't expect me to succeed. I was lucky enough that they didn't expect me to finish high school because of single mom and then to go on to college. Never in wildest dreams, not even at my high school, which I just went into their Hall of Fame this year. They didn't expect everything that I've accomplished, but they didn't know me. And they say, well, you might have, they thought I overachieved. I say I achieved because that
Did
desire that I had.
their opinion fuel your desire, your passion, or did it discourage?
Oh man, it fueled it. It fueled it. I was like, yes, okay. Yeah, okay. I'm gonna prove everybody wrong. I remember after going on and playing at Ohio State, which was the first thing, never in the wildest dream that I ever thought I'd play at Ohio State, but then going on to play professional basketball and then seeing myself in the newspaper here, and I getting calls from people like, oh my God, look at this. Never thought with a skinny little kid at 6'8" that had a pretty good senior year that wasn't recruited by a lot of schools, go on to do everything that I accomplished. And that's hard work and desire. And I had a chip on my shoulder because so many people expected me to fail.
I'm really kind of curious about this because the chip on the shoulder is something worth talking about. There's a lot of people that I think that's kind of what drives them. Do you feel like you ever have to evolve past the chip in order to feel fulfilled? Or have you? I guess that's the real question. Have you moved past the chip on the shoulder?
Yes, I have. I've passed that stage, but I also want to continue to evolve and continue to my legacy that I have because I have two daughters, and my legacy for them is to understand that hard work and believing in yourself works. And it showed that through them. And then through my grandson, you know, he's only two, but he's such a joy. And Lord willing, I'm around so I can share some of those things with him. And if I'm not around, my daughters can share that.
That's great. That's cool. So tell me about that first break. So it sounded like Ohio State, that was the one that started it.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was. When I left high school, I went all the way across the country to Arizona Western College, which is in Yuma, Arizona. So you can just imagine 17-year-old kid from the projects at Cleveland getting on the plane, going all the way over to Arizona to a junior college, which is right out in the desert. It's 110 every day playing basketball. And I got that opportunity through Bob Huggins, who was coach at West Virginia. He was playing at West Virginia at that time. And, you know, he had some connections with the coach that was there, and the coach was leaving to go to Arizona. So that gave me an opportunity not only just to go over there, but to really being in the desert. It forces you to buckle down, focus on your schoolwork and basketball. And that's what I did. And for my first year, I played a lot of minutes because we had a sophomore-laden team. And I had some coaches that were calling me and saying, well, you know, we want you to come and play. So here I am. I'm getting excited, man. I'm getting college offers already my first year. But I talked to my head coach, and he said, Derek, those are fine, but I think if you come back and continue to work, you'll get so many more offers, you won't know what to do. And I talked over with my mom, and she said, okay, well, it's your decision. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go back for my sophomore year. Went back for my sophomore year, had a great year. I started getting 80 to 100-something schools calling me from like Ohio State, UCLA, Arizona State, Texas, Oklahoma, all these schools calling me. And I had to sit down and make a decision on which school I wanted to go to. So put them in perspective. Here I am, a kid with no offers. Then I had tons of offers. I'm like, wow, which decision should I do? And then I decided on Ohio State. And one of the reasons why I went back to Ohio State, because my mom, being a single mother, she didn't get a chance to see me play that much in high school. So I wanted her to be able to see me all the time on national TV. She could get down to Columbus to see me play. And I think that was one of the reasons why I chose Ohio State, because of her, because I think she deserved to see her son play, and my sister too. So that's my story. And, you know, one of the things that I had to do is with playing basketball, I had to get my degree. That was one of the most important things, because as I grew up, I understood that you can only play basketball so long. But if you have that degree, that gives you an opportunity to do some other things once you decide to stop playing basketball. And I got it.
What'd you get your degree in?
Recreation education. I like putting together programs for kids. It's always been about kids with me. At first, I was going to do special ed, but I didn't think I had the patience to deal with kids with handicaps and stuff like that. Okay. So when I decided with recreation, I said, that's perfect for me, because I like to put together programs for kids and, you know, give them opportunities to do things.
Mm. So this is interesting. And you mentioned kid from the projects a few times. Yes. For people that haven't grown up in that, I want to try to paint a picture that goes outside of the movies. Can you give us kind of like a day that maybe you remember that's kind of just the worst possible day? Because so single mother, mm-hmm. you're helping raise your younger sister, dad's not mm-hmm. in the picture, and mm-hmm. you're living in the projects, and mm-hmm. you're trying to juggle all that. Do you have a particular day that you remember that you emotionally almost didn't make it through? Like, what was a day that just, you know, you're trying to play basketball and some kids are hazing you or something? Or I'm just trying to picture, for those of us that didn't grow up in the projects, what can you paint a picture for us?
Growing up in the projects, First of all, it's growing up in the inner city projects. There was some crime. There was a lot of police was in the area all the time. There was drugs that's being dealt, and it's a little bit one back then. It's a little bit more quieter, is what I'm saying. It wasn't like out on the streets as much. I had to catch the bus to go to high school. I had to catch two buses to go to high school. You fear for break-ins and people stealing cars, and then you have dealing with kids with fights and stuff like that. And it was pretty. You had to be pretty tough to live in the projects. But the good thing about it is back then, people looked out for each other a little bit more. Your families who stayed that were close to you, if you were doing something wrong, your mom and dad knew it. And then that person would tell you, you shouldn't be doing that. And there was a I don't know, we lived behind the furniture store called Quality Home Furniture Store, and they would get robbed all the time. You hear the alarm going off 2 to 3 times a week. And so you had to be constantly on your guard. I mean, constantly. Even when you come home at night, you have to be constantly on your guard. When you're going around to the store, you have to be constantly on guard. And that's what I was living in the projects. There was no specific day. I'm going to say, not having a father around was really tough for me. And I think one day out of it was Christmas, I think I was about maybe 6 years old, and my dad had called my mom and said, "Well, I'm gonna come by and bring you some Christmas toys." So my mom told me, and I was like, "Really? Oh yeah, okay." So I remember going as a kid, sitting in the window, waiting to see if he comes. Never came. Never came. And that I think that day that really hurt me, but it really gave me a perspective on what I have to do. And that was I think that was it about projects. It was tough. It was tough for sure. But we made it through. We made it through. And I made sure that once I became professional basketball player and stuff, I moved my mom and sister out of the projects, and we moved what we call up the hill, and got a house and stuff like that. So I felt very good about that because that was important to me to get them out of the projects.
Good, good. Yeah, that image still bugs me for some reason. I don't know, just seeing a little Derek looking out the window. I don't know. It's, and then of course your mind always over makes it over dramatic, like it was snowing, your ideal sort
Oh
of Christmas,
man,
and
look, man,
mom's
I
just
used to
kind of
see cars
watching.
coming by and thinking it was him, and I'm like, oh man.
That's multiple layers of messed up. But so you're
Yeah.
so that's the that's what that's the start. But now you have so many offers, and you
Yes.
pick Ohio State because
Yes.
your mom, one of the few supporters
Yep.
in your corner,
Yep.
gets to see her son play basketball.
Yes.
So tell me about from there, because at some point you end up overseas here at a few different places.
Yes. After I graduated from Ohio State, I had a few offers, and I decided to go overseas to play. I was wondering what it would be like. And I was very fortunate to spend a long time overseas playing in Belgium, Brazil. Played and lived in Australia, and then playing professionally in the CBA, which is the G League now, and then getting the chance to continue to play over in Spain for a little while, and all these things. And just think, I'm getting a chance to see the world. These are the things that I read about in books about what is it like to play over in this country. And I remember one of the best places that I've got a chance to play and live, and I love the country there, is Australia. It is such a beautiful place, and I had such a great time there. It was unbelievable.
That's fantastic. So you and I had talked a little bit about, just the stark contrast between, so you're in Australia, a significant different in time zone. I feel like it's polar opposite, unless I'm wrong. You were raised in the projects.
Correct.
And again, for me, I don't know. I don't remember you really pointing this out a lot. But for me, for some reason, I always think about the food. Just going from humble food option to next thing you know, somebody's inviting you. And obviously, in Australia, it's going to be completely different. I'm pretty sure you can actually eat kangaroo over there. Maybe I'm wrong. Don't quote me. But.
Never had
There's so
that.
that difference. What was a
It
moment where it's all different, right? Your mom's your supporter, and she's in a different. It's night over there. You're I don't exactly know what food you were raised on, but probably not the same as Australia. And you're in some version of the big leagues. Can you kind of tell me about a moment where you had maybe almost an out-of-body experience where you're like, holy cow, what this isn't me anymore. I'm playing somebody else's, I pinch myself and I'll wake up.
Oh, absolutely. I tell you a quick story. One of my teammates, when I played in the CBA, he had played over in Australia, and he was telling me about Australia. And when you think about Australia, you think about outback and stuff like that. You don't think that they have big cities and stuff like that. So he called me. He said, "Derek, I'm going back to coach in Australia, and I would like for you to come and play for me." And I said, "Really, on? Really, Australia?" He said, "Yeah, it's great over here. You would love it." So I had to think about it, and I think that was hard because I had to tell my mom I'm going over to Australia to play. And she said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, it's a good opportunity for me." So we sat down and looked at it, and wow, they have some big cities, and it's a great place. So then I get over there, I got to fly. About 25 hours. So imagine me flying all the way to Australia, landing, and then I see this big beautiful city. I landed in Sydney, and I see this big beautiful city. I see the opera house that sits on water. I see the big bridge that crosses from North Sydney to go into Sydney. And the owner of the team and the coach, they pick me up, and we go to their house for dinner. So, I'm sitting around dinner, and what they first thing they see was calamari, which was squid. And I'm like, so I taste it, and I'm like, "Excuse me, but I can't eat it." And they say, "We understand, so we have some steak for you, and steak and potatoes and stuff like that." So then after I got done eating, I said, "Man, I'm stuffed." And they all started laughing. And I'm sitting there at the table with them, sounding like, "What's funny?" They say, "Because stuff means the F word." I'm like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know." I say, "Oh, that's fine. Now I know. Now I know." And I got a chance to go across the boat, go in the opera house and see the opera house on water. And another quick story. I'm driving the car because they give you a car to drive. So my coach say, "If we're gonna give you a car, you have to learn how to drive on the opposite side of the road." So we drive on the left, they drive on the right-hand side. So I'm nervous as anything because when we're doing this, it's rush hour, and I'm sitting like this driving and stuff like that, and I'm like, oh my goodness, say you gotta learn. I learned how to do it. It was fine. Then a few days later, I'm driving, and you know me being 7 feet, I got the seat all the way in the back, and the windows were a little bit tinted, right? So I get pulled over by the police. I'm like, oh, what did I do? I rolled the window down, and the officer said, pulled you over because I didn't see anybody driving the car. All I seen was arms here. That I couldn't even see him. Nobody was there. And I told him, so officer, I'm 7 feet tall, and I'm kind of in the back seat. He smiled and laughed, and I told him I played for the Sydney Supersonics. He said, go right ahead. Good luck to you, young man.
I'm having to Google here because I'm kind of curious. I'm just trying to visually put myself in the police officer moment. So I'm Googling the average height for an Australian male. Of course, in my mind, I'm just imagining this outback police officer. So average height, by the way, is 5'10". And Derek, remind us again your height?
7 feet.
7 feet. So
7 feet. Yeah.
Reason I pulled you over, mate, is I didn't see anybody driving the car.
Yep, he didn't see anything, man. He just said, now who's driving this car?
he's going to have to, like, get his head in just to see you.
I mean, man, if we had cameras back then, man, I would have had to record that, man, because that's classic.
That's hilarious. I'd have you get out, classic. But I don't want to have to stuff you back in the car.
Oh, man, yes. Yes, so that was my experience. But my years there, man, was so... It was beautiful, beautiful. I almost decided to stay over there and live with some of my teammates and some of the guys I played against. They're still over there to this day. I almost lived over there, lived in Australia. It was that good.
Mm.
It was that good.
That's do you visit? When was the last time you were back over there?
Man, I haven't been Australia since 1988. I talked to all my some of my teammates and some of the guys that I played against that are still over there and played with, I still talk to them. Yep, but I haven't been back yet. I plan on making a trip here sometime in the next maybe couple of years.
Gotcha. So you gave a lot of awesome stories, and it doesn't have to be Australia. Did you ever have a moment where I mean, you're going and going and going. You've got all these offers, and you're going to these different countries now, and you're playing in Australia, this beautiful city, and you're going over to the Opera House. And maybe it's just me, but every now and again, when I'm in a situation like that, like even on the boat, right, just the visuals, it's like a moment of awe where it's like, yeah. I don't know if I ever expected to be in a position like this. Do you have, and maybe you had so many of these that you kind of lost track, but do you have an apex moment where you're like, I made it, I guess. I did it. This is it. Like, this is peak.
I think not just playing in different country, but have people from different countries cheering for you. And then people from different countries booing you. And loving it and excited and being blessed that every single day I get a chance to do something that I love and get paid for it.
So you had a lot of those moments on the courts, yes. Is what you're yes. saying. That moment yes. when you dunked it and the whole crowd.
Yep. Yep. Or one time when I scored 35 points and 18 rebounds and did all that. It's like, wow. And then to see all that stuff in the newspaper. And then when you play a bad game, see how they said Derek Polk had an off night, needs to play better, and they crucify you. And that gives you fuel for the fire to go out there and do best the next game. And then when you're walking in this other country and people notice you and they stop to see you for get your autograph and say, we watched you on TV. You did very well. And then back then when you go and hanging out and stuff and people in the restaurants and stuff like that know you and say, you don't have to pay for your meal. This is on us. mean, that is a great feeling, man. It really is people that appreciate what you do. And it keeps you very humble, which through all this whole process, I'm still the same person. I'm still humble because number one, from where I grew up, number two, my mom kept me grounded. And number three, I have a lot of respect for people and for the game of basketball. Try to never cheat it. Try to play the best that I can at every single moment.
How did you stay grounded? How did your mom help keep you grounded? What,
Growing,
that's.
just growing up and being humble and not having a whole lot of things. She grew up when she had me at 17. So I know that was a real struggle sometimes for her having a 17. And my grandmother helped out immensely with me, well, watching me too sometimes and stuff like that. But I know it was hard on her. And then not to have that father figure or that husband in her life, she has boyfriends and stuff, but they still wasn't on a consistent basis. It was hard for her. So I tried to make it a little bit easy for her and my sister as much as possible.
What was how were you keeping in touch with your mom and your sister at this time in Australia?
Well, the time change, and then the phone bill was pretty high, so I had to limit my calls and stuff like that. So we would write letters to each other, and I get a letter from my sister, and the letter that come to me, and we talk, and then I call home maybe once or twice a week. We talk, and I let my mom know, doing good, everything's doing good, and then she'll call me and stuff like that. And we didn't have Messenger and stuff like that back then. So
Right, this is
it was a little
pre-Zoom
tough.
and FaceTime.
Oh man, yeah. So this was, it was tough because I didn't call home all the time, but I did call, say, "Mom, how you doing?" Talk for a few minutes. "I'm doing good. Everything's well. How's everything going at home?" And stuff like that. And it was tough. It was tough. I remember when I decided to come back from Australia. I seen my mom. She came in from work. First thing she said, "Where at? Where at?" And I'm here, Mom. I'm here. And she must have hugged me for about maybe, I say, 20, 25 minutes, man. Just hug me, say, "Happy that I'm back. I'm back with her."
So tell me about coming back. Was Australia the last overseas country before you came back?
Nope. I went on to play in Brazil. And which was a little different, was a little different. It was about 110 degrees back then, 110
Whew.
degrees. This was in the morning. So we would get up in the morning and we would run in the hills about 2 miles, and then we come back and practice. Then we have the afternoon off, so most of us would lift, and then we eat. And then we had a lady we meet at a house. A lady, she fixed us lunch and she fixed us dinner. Then we come back and play at night. It was so hot when I would go and get ice cream. As soon as I walk outside, it's melting. So I had to get it right away. That's how hot it was in Brazil, which was
At
fun, man. I had
what
a good
time of
time in Brazil.
year? Was that summer or?
Yes. Yep. It was in February, when I went over there.
Wow, sorry. I'm just kind of trying to mentally. I mean, I lived in Texas for a little bit, and I don't know as to if it really hit 110 all that often.
Man,
That's a heat. That's
yes,
heat
yes it
you can
is, yes
feel.
it is,
Was
yes,
it humid at all or
yes.
pretty dry heat?
It was humid. It was
Okay.
sweating. You was sweating, man. And that's one thing when you look at soccer. I gotta tell the story. Look at soccer, and you look at it on TV. But at 10, 11 o'clock at night, guys were still playing. They're out there playing soccer. Lights are on. They're out there playing soccer. And this is around 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And it's still 100-something degrees.
Interesting. Okay, so what I'm hearing is people, they live this sport over there in Brazil. And yes. They live this yes. sport in grueling heat.
Hmm. Yes. Yes. All right. And I'm first-hand witness to see that, man. I'm first-hand All right. witness.
So tell me about the transition then back to the States. So Brazil, good, cool thing is you're back in a normal time zone. I should say normal. Yes. You know, it's yes. A little bit, those phone bills, maybe not as bad.
Right. No, they had, they gave me, I had a cell phone. So, you know, I'd have to pay the bill, but I made it a little bit easier where, you know, I could call and talk for a few minutes longer.
Yeah.
Which is good. So, you know, then I was trying to decide, well, you know, what do I want to do? So I went out to Los Angeles to play in the Pro Summer League. I was trying to decide, you know, opportunity possibly to play, you know, play in the NBA and stuff like that. And the Clippers were interested, but they had so many guaranteed contracts, there wasn't an opportunity for me. But opportunity came for me to play with the Globetrotters. They were out scouting players. And what happened was they say, well, you know, we're interested in you. Would you be interested in coming to our tryout camp? So I had to weigh those options and stuff like that. And, you know, growing up watching the Globetrotters, they were very, very exciting and enjoyable. And I loved it. So I said, you know, I made the decision, called my mom and told her, you know, I got an offer to go and play with the Globetrotters. So I'm doing tryouts. And she was kind of excited about that. But, you know, his mom would say, it's always your decision. She'll give me her feedback, but ultimately it's my decision. So I went to tryout camp. They had 25 people there. Out of 25, they had two teams. They kept 10. I was one of those 10. So then they offered me a contract. And I said to myself, okay, this is a little different speed, different speed, but it's something that I'm very intrigued about. Man, let me tell you something. Once I say yes, and I sign a contract, and then I say, well, you know, I'm getting ready to play with the world-famous Harlem Globetrotters. And growing up as a kid and watching them, I always said, how do they do those tricks with the basketball? So I became one. So then one of the older Trotters told me, Derek, if you want to get good with this basketball, you have to keep it with you. You have to take it to your hotel room, and you got to practice. Got to practice, practice, practice. Man, I practiced with that basketball. Man, I almost broke some lamps and stuff, so I moved them out of the way. But, wow, what an experience, man. It's like you're playing in a different city every single night. And my first year, we got a chance to play in all the big NBA arenas. So the Globetrotters used to come to Cleveland around Christmas time from between the 26th and the 30th. We played on the 26th. That's my birthday, December 26th. We played out at where the Cavs used to play at Richfield Coliseum. They had it in the newspaper. A lot of people came out to watch the Globetrotters, but they came out to watch Cleveland's own Derek Pope play. They gave me a standing ovation. I had such a great time playing, handling the basketball. It was great. I had a good birthday party after that, man. It was fantastic. It was on to the next city. I got a chance to play in the old Boston Garden, and we were in the Celtics locker room. And right there, you would see Larry Bird's locker and Kevin McHale's locker and Dennis Johnson's locker and all these guys that you watch on TV. And I'm like, wow. Then I get on play on the Boston Garden, the parquet floor. And there was dead spots. When they say there was dead spots, there were dead spots. But that floor was so good to jump on, because I was a dunker. So that floor was so good to jump, to dunk on, man. It was unbelievable. It's on to
What's
the next
a dead it, spot? I'm thinking of cell phones for some reason, but that's not what you're talking about.
When you bounce the basketball and you bounce it, the ball just stops. That's a dead spot. The Boston Garden has dead. It had dead spots in it.
Okay.
Celtics knew where they were.
Wow.
Yeah, they had
okay.
dead spots.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So my guess is that has something to do with the floor and almost
yes.
like a little air gap, and then you go to
yep.
bounce it, and the floor gives
yep.
instead of.
Yep.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
Very, man. And then
that has to be extremely frustrating. You know, you go to bounce the ball and it doesn't come back to you. You're like, what?
That's why when we went to practice, you knew where the dead spots were. So then you didn't go to those dead spots, and we had a dribbler. He didn't go to those dead spots.
This is fascinating. So I'm sorry, but I'm just not huge on sports, I guess, but you're describing a world where you not only have to be a master of your craft, you have to be master of your tools, the ball,
yes.
and you have to
yep.
be master of your environment ever
yes.
changing.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that makes the Globetrotters so unique and different, is that we adjust to where we're at, if it means adjusting. I'll tell you a few stories a little later about playing overseas with the Globetrotters. I tell you that I got to finish the story about playing in the big NBA arenas. So then the next night, we're in Chicago. Now, we didn't play in the Chicago, their arena. We played at DePaul, which was okay. And you still had celebrities that would come out and watch you. Then we go and play in the Palace in Auburn Hills, where the Detroit Pistons play. And then we would travel and go over to Los Angeles. We travel to Los Angeles. What we do is we fly when we go on West Coast. So, and our bus driver would meet us there. So here we are playing in the Great Western Forum, where the Lakers used to play. And one of the things that we did was, you know, you have celebrities that come out and watch you. You know, Jack Nicholson came out to watch us and everything. And we made Whoopi Goldberg our honorary Globetrotter. She came out on the floor, and we made her a Globetrotter. And just imagine playing in the Great Western Forum in Los Angeles, and then you have celebrities that are there coming to watch you. And that's one thing about playing for the Globetrotters. Everybody around this world, even to this day, have a story about watching the Globetrotters. So when they ask you, you play for the Globetrotters? I remember my mom and dad taking me. Or I remember seeing them here, and I remember seeing them there. And I'm like, yes. Globetrotters are well-known around the world, man. Even NBA guys, they were at all at Globetrotters. How do you do all those tricks with the basketball? And a lot of people don't realize way, way back in the day, in 1946, the Globetrotters were bigger than the NBA. Excuse me, 1936. Mm. They were bigger than the NBA. So the NBA would play games first, and the Globetrotters would be the headliners.
So the Globetrotters seem different to me in that there's a definite focus on the entertainment value, right?
Yes.
So
yep.
is there something that they taught you that you learned regards to that? Because you're kind of transitioning from, I mean, I'm not saying you don't have to be a master of the sport. That's not the point.
Yes.
But the point
yep.
is the crowd needs to be thrilled.
Absolutely. And it was an adjustment, because a lot of people don't realize there comes a time, there's a quarter, maybe and a half, where you're playing real basketball. You're playing against the Washington Generals, and it's on, and then their show plays. And one of the things that is very difficult, you know, you play every single night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You may have a Sunday off. You may have a day off, but you're playing every night, and you're traveling in a different city. When we were in Texas, we stayed in Texas for about 10 days. So, you know, we're playing two games in Houston, two games in Dallas, two games in San Antonio, and then we're hitting a few small cities in Texas. Then we were in Kansas City. And let me see if I remember. We played with Kansas City. We played outside of the city. I can't remember. And then did we play at Cobo Hall? Not Cobo, where the Kansas City Kings played. Oh man, I'm trying to remember.
You're good. It's one thing I feel like I should know. So it reflects more on me probably than you. Now's about the time where our Kansas City local kind of raised here. I jump in and say, "Oh, yeah," but nope. So I'll take the heat for
That's okay. That's okay,
that
Greg. That's okay.
one.
But
So
yes.
yeah, I have a question here. So I've been thinking about this. When you
Okay.
talked about Harlem Globetrotters and city to city to city, I think that was, and then maybe the Sydney Opera House did this too, but then also the frequency from city to city to city, I'm thinking, oh, you're not getting any time to really enjoy the city. But then I'm thinking, no, you're probably, or at least the majority of the team, or some of them, long days. You know, it's the whole work hard, play hard, the game ends, and now we're gonna all drink and do whatever at the bar. How's Derek keeping clean? Or is Derek keeping clean? Did we skid there for a minute?
Well, I do gotta admit that I did back then. I did enjoy the nightlife we did when we got an opportunity. I did. I really did. I got a chance to see the part of the city and experience all that. I did. And also, I realized back then that I had to renew renew my faith. I did. I did, 'cause it was tough. I mean, I tell you, man, it was really tough, man. 'Cause being a Globetrotter, it's people just love you. Man, people just love you. They want to be around you. They want to hang out with you and stuff like that. And I did enjoy myself back then. I really did, and I enjoyed every bit of being a Globetrotter. There's no doubt about it. No doubt, but. I also realized that, in order f I had to renew, get into religion this a little bit after my time. I had to renew my faith. I had to renew my faith, and I've been renewing my faith, been good, ever since then. It has. God has been good to me, and I have no regrets. He's always on my shoulder. He's always in my life, and he's always guiding me. I've been blessed.
When and where did your faith find you in all this?
Well, growing up as a kid, I always went to church on Sunday. We went to church on Sunday. Then we would go down, me and my friends, we'd go down and watch movies downtown. And once I got to Ohio State, you renew your faith all the time with God, all the time, because you got to remember, we're nobody's perfect. But I accepted Christ when I was at Ohio State. I did. I accepted Christ as my personal savior. Then when I got back out in the world, I had to ask God to forgive me, because I'm back out there again. So I asked him, forgive me for my sins. I'm not perfect. But, it. I've learned over the years as I've gotten older and to look back that I was a blessing from him to be able to do all these things. And I owe him an honor and a faith to be led by him. And I think that's one of the most important things that you recognize it and you have your personal relationship with him. And everything that's gone on in my life, he's been there with me, whether it be the good or the bad, or where coach telling me, Derek, we love the way you play, but we don't have any room for you. But I'm gonna trade you here, and I think you'll do good there. And guess what? I did good. So I lean on my faith. I do. I lean on my faith, and that's one of the reasons why. It helps me with what I'm doing, to try to help kids, not only just to get them to get to the next level, but to share with them about how good God is. And if you work hard and persevere and push yourself, you know, things will work out for you. That's my story. I'm a person that worked hard at what I wanted to accomplish in life. And, you know, God has helped me.
Something I haven't asked, and I hate to make assumption, but is your mother still with us?
No, my mom, she passed away in 2014. Give another story, you know. My dad was never around when I was growing up. I remember when I was about 16 years old, and I would only see him at funerals. So he was over at my uncle's house. And I was very disrespectful to him because I had a lot of pain, a lot of hurt. And I, 16-year-old kid cussing out your so-called father. And my uncle and them, they chastised me, said, you should never do that. But I shared with them, but why? Because he was never in my life. So then let's go about a few years after that. I would say around when I turned 48, 49, my mom told me, you should try to find your father and, you know, talk with him. I don't know where that came from, but I said, why do you say that? So you should really know.
You said age 48, 49, was that? 48, did I get that right? Wow, I don't know. It's you'd almost think it'd have to be some sort of faith or destined thing, because that's normally, I feel like 18, 19, 21, 22, 25, that's about the age, right, where it's like, hey, maybe, all right, so 48, 49, keep going.
Yep, and so I called around and see where, and come to find out that he had been, I don't know what he had just moved there, but he'd been there for about 10, 15 years. He was only about maybe 15, 20 minutes from me. Never knew that. So I called him and he was kind of shocked, but I called him and said, I need to sit down and talk with you. And he said, okay. So we sat down and we talked. Now he sat away from me because he didn't know whether I was going to hit him or whatever. So we sat down and I talked with him and I said to him, I say, you know, as I've grown up, you know, I've heard that you've watched me on TV and you tell everybody, that's my son. And I share with, I remember being a little kid at Christmas and you say you're coming over to bring me some Christmas toys and you never came. And I got a question. I want to know why. You know, because as I've grown up, I understand that people get divorced, but that still doesn't stop you from being a parent. And he told me, he said, he apologized for that. He said, I just couldn't take it at that time because I wasn't with your mother. And, you know, she had a boyfriend and all that. And, you know, I said, that's still no excuse for you not being a father to me. There's still no excuse for you calling me and telling me, you know, say, hey, how you doing and stuff. I would see you at funerals. And I know you'd be scared to come over and talk to me because of what happened when I was a little younger. Say, yeah, it was. So we talked. And we talked for about 4 hours about everything, about life and stuff like that. And so, you know, I said, well, I'll talk to you later. We'll stay in contact. That's, you know, we talk maybe once or twice a week. So when I called, it was strange. I'm talking to my father. Never done that. So I say, how you doing? What's going on and everything? And this went on for a couple years. And I guess in my mind, I guess we had kind of buried hatchet. I found out what was going on. And this was in 2012. He passed away. So when he passed away, I went to the funeral. And you know, when your parent leaves you, it's emotion. He was there. He looked good, but there was no emotion. I couldn't cry. I couldn't cry because he was never around. He was never around to be in my life. So, you know, my mom said, well, you know, that's like, at least you got a chance to talk with him and stuff like that. So a couple years later, my mom passed and my whole world just dropped because she was my emotional rock. I had that connection with mom. That's mom. Mom was all there, always there for me and my sister. And that was a tough one. So both my parents are gone. So it's just me and my sister. So, you know, we've moved on. She's done well. She's got 3 degrees and she's doing very well. And she's married. She's been married for 25 years and she's got 3 kids and she's got 4 grandkids and she's doing well, you know. So we carry on our mom's legacy, which that we've been successful. And she would look nothing better than have her kids being successful, not only on the education piece, but in life. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
It's a good one, man. I mean, I got a little emotional because, I don't know, you're being very polite about your father. And I don't want to speak too poorly, I should be careful with
my words. No, you can. You're right.
But it seems to me that he was so afraid, almost kind of cowardly, in that he would say, I'm going to bring, maybe just to appease your mom, I'll bring presents, whatever, you know, whatever he felt like she needed to hear. But then the moment when the rubber was going to meet the road, it was easier to just not do anything. And
You know, it's just, you know, like, Dad, you know, he has some other kids and stuff, and, you know, trying to have a relationship with them is tough. I got his other son goes to visit his gravesite every, on his birthdays and on the day that he passed and stuff. And last year, I went with him to visit. That's the first time. And it's the first time that I went to visit my father's gravesite. First time. No emotions, but went to out of respect. That was the first time. I haven't been back since. And, you know, learning up to be one thing that I learned that you know, God says you have to forgive. And I forgive. You know, there's still a part of me, you know, that's still on the resent the fact that he wasn't in my life. But I forgave him. And, you know, I often think about it and I say to myself, you know, I have some of his traits in me. I do.
Well, and it's, you know, this is just, I feel like, proof that life is more nuanced than we want it to be. I want to put your dad in this box in my mind that says cowardly. And yet he met with you at all. He could have stood you up. Like you said, he sat at a distance. He didn't know if you were going to go swinging. But he could have just as easily not shown up then either, right? Just like he didn't show up years ago when it came to presents. And so, you know, there's something to that, I guess.
It is. And, you know, I did share with him that, you know, I'm older now, and I understand in life even more now that things happen and stuff like that. But still wanted you to be a father to me. I still should have been able to call you and talk to you about things that's going on in my life. You know, you're my father. You know, if you bring the presents now, back then I was a little kid, but as I got older, I understood. But you still should have been there. Even if you wasn't there in the present, you should have been there where I'd be able to pick up the phone and call you and say, how you doing? And stuff like that. And I couldn't do that till I got to be darn near 50 years old.
Who's kind of your rock now with your mother having passed?
You know, I'd say with my sister, you know, we have a good bond with with each other. We talk about things, you know, talk about things. We talk about life. You know, she'll call me and run stuff by me. You know, she's married. She got her husband. We have a great relationship. And you know, I talk, you know, with my daughters. I talk with them about life, some things that I'm going through, some things I keep, you know, I keep to myself and deal with myself, because they have a lot of stuff on their plate too. So, you know, and then, you know, I just sometimes I just sit back and talk with God and tell God, you know, I know you got this under control. You know where my heart is. You know what I want to do, and you know, we take it from there.
So what was your transition? We kind of stopped at Harlem Globetrotters, but what you're doing now, what was kind of your transition into that?
Once I stopped playing on the professional level, I still play. I still play to this day, 3 times a week. I still play. I get in. I've been playing in a travel league for 30 years. Now it's just doing that and then coaching college kids. I coach at Bryan and Stratton College. I'm assistant coach.
And back in Ohio, kids. Right? Or at least headquartered.
Yeah, back
now.
In Ohio. Back in Ohio. And I'm teaching not just the high school kids and some middle school kids, but I'm also teaching college kids about the game of basketball and helping them to navigate to where they can get to the next level as far as going to a bigger school, junior college, because I coach a 2-year school. And I'm a third assistant on our 4-year school. So trying to get them to understand the game and get them to the next level of going to college. And then the other ones, that the older ones, either they're going to be able to go overseas to play, or they're going to have to transition into using their degree to get a job one way or another. So I did that piece from sharing my experience with them on dealing with basketball and schoolwork, and how it's important they both coincide together. It's not one without the other. Because if you don't do one, you're not going to be able to do the other. So the education piece is the most important. And then playing basketball, you have both those things intertwined together, and you're doing well, then, you know, life should be good. You worry about is playing basketball and enjoying yourself, because there's not a lot of kids that get the opportunity to play basketball in college. Very few. And then with my program, you know, my program expanding. This year we're going to expand from 2 teams to 5 to possibly 6 teams. Now I want to expand it and give underprivileged kids a chance to play the game that they really like, and to teach them how to do it the right way. And also, at some point here in the next year, so I'm going to add the mental aspect to my program, because not just for the kids on the mental aspect, but for the parents, because parents' mental aspect is just as important as the kids.
I understand. Yeah, a mental health component.
Yes.
Yeah. I love too how it kind of felt like when you and I talked about this portion before, it kind of feels like a little bit of full circle in that, you know, your mother supporting you and that first basketball coach supporting you and cheering you on to the basketball coach that said, you know, hey, if you really zero in on this, you can get more offers than you, now it feels like now you're the person capable of pouring into that next, Derek.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. And I try to share. I think sometimes, you know, one thing our kids, sometimes they want to do things on their own, their way, as far as the basketball component is concerned. But then when they do it our coach's way, it's funny how it works, and trying to get that in their heads to understand your way doesn't work, but our way doesn't work, because we've forgotten more about basketball than you would ever imagine. And being a former professional basketball player, I know how your body feels. I know what's going through your mind. So it would be smart enough for you to to listen. I always say, knowledge speaks, wisdom listens. Knowledge speaks, wisdom listens.
You know, I've heard that a few times, but it hits different coming from you, I'll be honest. Just hearing your story and what you came from and the context that you're saying that in. And so, thank you.
It is. Okay. Hey, I got one more thing to share with you. One thing about being being a Globetrotter, and I got to share this. Just think, a kid coming from the projects from the inner city of Cleveland.
Yep.
I got the opportunity to go to the White House, to see the White House, to meet President Bush's dad and Barbara Bush. Guess what? I got a chance to sit down, have dinner with Muhammad Ali and his wife, Lottie. I got a chance to meet Arnold Schwarzenegger. I got a chance to meet Florence Griffin Joyner. I got a chance to meet Charles Mann, who played for the Redskins. I got a chance to meet country singer Barbara Mandrell. Met her once, met her twice. We're going out. We're on the bus, okay, and we're going out to Eunice Shriver Kennedy's. They got a mansion outside of D.C. On this bus was, I know some of the older people will remember, Kirk Cameron from Growing Pains and his wife, Dick Van Patten, sitting down with Ethel Kennedy, Robert Kennedy's widow. I mean, all these things. We were there for the President Council on Physical Fitness, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was in charge of that, and the Globetrotters were there. So myself and five of my teammates, we performed there. We performed there for the people. And getting a chance to meet Mary Lou Retton. I mean, my goodness, these are celebrities that you watch on TV. And one of the most important things, they were in awe of me. I was in awe of them because I watched you on TV. And they were like, wow, I can't believe I'm sitting here with Globetrotters. How do you do this? How do you do that? What is it like being a Globetrotter? These are celebrities that you watch on TV, and they want to ask you, how's it feel to be a Globetrotter? So you think a young man that said, oh, that was crazy. But that's another thing. I was blessed to do that.
Wow. Yeah. Humbling. Yeah.
Very, very, very humbling and very, man, very excited. Very excited about that. And I also, you know, I didn't share this with you. I forgot about you. And I just remember wrote a little children's, I wrote a children's book. It's called Seven's Travel Around the World. Hold on a second. Can you hold on a second? I'm gonna get it so I can show it to you. Okay.
Around the world. All right.
Yep.
I'm looking up a picture here. Seven's Travel Around the World. We gotta get that book. So interesting. You wrote a book, Seven's Travel Around the World, by Derek Polk. I'm trying to keep audio going for the audio stream.
Sam, I'm going to put this. Now. I've been waiting.
You're
I'm
fine.
Gonna put this
yeah.
on my website.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna show this to you. This is Seven's Travel Around the
yeah.
World.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome. Okay. Okay. With the little world as a basketball kind of.
Yep. And my idea was that, you know, this book is only $15, and I wanted
sure.
kids to have a manual, and I wanted kids to have a book that they can read and they can read and enjoy. It could be little kids too. So, and what it is, it's got pictures of me, cartoon character, in different places around the world that I've been. So this is me, the Eiffel Tower
wow.
in France. This is me in Greece.
Yeah.
Greece.
Wow.
And then this is me in Sydney. Remember the opera house that we
yeah,
were talking about?
Yeah.
That's me. And then this is me in Japan at Mount Fuji.
That's pretty cool.
And then this is me in the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
And this is me in Bullring in Spain. Because we got a chance to see a bullfight in Spain. And this is me in Toronto.
Where can we find a copy of that if we wanted one? Is it on Amazon yet?
I'm gonna put it on my website.
And what was the website one more time?
DerekPolkSports.com.
Derek Polk Sports.
And then this is me and my teammates at the White House.
As you can see,
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah.
Wow, there you are, man. Right next to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Barbara Mandrell.
That's cool. Yeah.
And then Ethel Kennedy.
Man, you're tall.
the late, great Florence Griffith Joyner.
Yeah.
And then trying to put it so you can see it. And then
you're fine. Yeah.
And John
Don't show
Lloyd.
Us the whole thing. We won't buy the book. We need to get that book.
Oh man, I gotta show. Wait a minute. Cool. I gotta show Muhammad Ali.
Oh, okay. Yes, I would agree to that. There's something to
gotta
that.
Gotta show
there,
him. And
so.
I sat down and had dinner with him, man. What an honor. He was so cool. Oh man, yes.
Was he?
Yes. Yes, he was.
What's one thing that stood out about him?
You know, he was going through his Parkinson's disease still. But, you know, he hit his hand and say, yeah, you know how he always shook those hands like that. He said to me, whispered to me, say, can you rumble? I said, I can rumble, champ, but I can't rumble by you, like just like you. And then, you know, he would go into a trance. And his wife, Lonnie, would say he'd do that ever since he had the Frazier fight. And then he woke up and smiled, said, gotcha. Man, what an honor. What an honor to see the greatest, man. I had the chance to sit down, have dinner with Muhammad Ali, the greatest.
That's fascinating, too, because it sounds like even, I mean, I don't know, he's still got some flair about him, even at that stage.
Oh, yeah. He still had that aura. People talk about with Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali and stuff. I mean, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. But until you meet Muhammad Ali, he had that aura about him, you know, and how he came up is, you know, it's just inspiring, man. It really is. I've been blessed to sit down with him. Unbelievable.
So there's two ways I like to wrap this up. So the first one is, what's kind of one piece of wisdom that's kept you through the trials that's consistently rang true?
I've met every challenge that has challenged me through my faith and belief in God. I put the work in, the time in, and belief in myself through God. And I share with kids that no matter what your situation is, if you really want to do something, you have to make that sacrifice to do it. And I know sometimes things that are going on at home, you have no choice about it, but please stay focused and do things, try to do things the right way, and good things work out for you, and continue to trust in God. And remember what I said, knowledge speaks, wisdom listens. And I always share that with kids. When you have older people and they're sharing knowledge with you, you take that knowledge and wisdom and try to instill it into your life to help you be a better person. Because that's what I did. I made that sacrifice, a lot of sacrifices to get where I've been. I've been blessed. I always said all the time, I've been blessed. I've lived a good life. I have.
How can we plug into what you're doing? Like, what's the best way if people want to engage with Derek Polk, or specifically what you're working on right now, other than maybe getting the book? What's the best way for them to do that?
They can go on my website. And, you know, my email address is there. They can email me. And if they want to decide, if they want to make any kind of donation, there's a thing where you can donate to it because it's a nonprofit. So, you know, they'll get a tax write-off on it, which is good. And it just shares some things about, you know, what I'm doing. I'm also looking for sponsors because, you know, I'm in the inner city with kids as well. So, you know, I want to try to make sure I have enough money so kids can't make it or they can't fund, you know, they can't pay, they can still play. I did that last year, and I think I must have sponsored kids for about $1,500, down to $2,000 that they didn't have to pay. They need help. They need help too, and we need to continue to try to help our, you know, help our kids continue to be successful in life. Because sometimes it's not their fault for certain situations that they're in. So if we can help them in any type of way, that would be great.
That's fantastic. Thank you
But
so
I'm gonna
much for
send you. I'm
joining
gonna get
us
you one
today.
of these. I'm gonna get you one of these books. I'm gonna send it to you. Send you one.
If you send me a signed copy, Derek, I would be
Yes.
absolutely honored.
You got it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's
Oh
been a
man, thank
blessing.
you for having me, man. I love sharing my story and hey man, you're a great host, man. You really are. You know what you're talking about and you do a great job. So I got to give you props. You make me feel comfortable. You make me want to share my story.
If I smile anymore, my face will break. Thank you.
That's
Thank you,
okay.
Derek.
We all need to smile. Trust me.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.